Hi, everybody. Welcome back to our next episode of A Father's Love, Healing Through Heartache. Chris Lepardi and I are thrilled that you're here listening with us each time. We started this podcast just to share our stories of grief and our process walking through the loss of our sons. Chris lost Mason at 7 years old, and I lost my son Jameson at 9. And we've been honored lately to be able to have a lot of other fathers join us to share their stories. And we're all in this together. And so we are thrilled to welcome Chris Garvey with us. Chris Lepardi, how are you doing, my friend?
Doing great, buddy.
I'm doing okay. And I'm going to be a mess today because we have two Chrises here that I'm going to have a hard time keeping track of. Chris Garvey is joining us from Ontario, Canada. Chris Garvey, welcome, my friend.
Thank you.
Good. And it's just kind of funny because we've had a few guests on from the Buffalo, New York area. Chris Lepardi is from Buffalo, New York, moving back there this summer. I'm from south of Buffalo. And Chris Garvey, we're excited because he's our first international guest. But he is from Ontario, Canada, not terribly far from Buffalo, New York. So I'm going to do my best to keep track of things today and not confuse everybody. But Chris Garvey, thank you for joining us. We're going to give you the floor and just let you share your story.
Thanks so much, guys. It means a lot to be here and be able to share my story. In 1995, so 10 years or 28 years ago, probably was one of the happiest days of my life. On January 12th, my son Blake was born. And, you know, I finally had somebody to carry on the name. And he came out, he was handsome, he was healthy. And, you know, at that point, I couldn't be happier. Blake grew up and he was a very sociable kid, very good with people. He had an amazing sense of humor. He was like any typical kid growing up. You know, he played the basketball, he played soccer in the summer, and I was able to coach them in these sports. So it was pretty cool to be able to keep that bond going. You know, he had a real mysterious kind of look to him, and he had this real contagious smirk that, you know, you always wonder, is he up to no good, or is he just kind of sneaky? But he was an amazing kid. And I think what happened in Blake's situation, as he got a little older, he was dealing with some stresses in life. By the time he was 16, he came to my wife and I, Suzanne, he came to us and he said, you know, I think I've, from the internet looking on, I think I'm depressed. I think I've got some situations I might want to deal with. So we took him to our family doctor and we talked to him, and he was diagnosed, possibly with depression. They sent us to another clinic in our area, a little more based on mental health and so on. And we talked to a doctor there, a psychiatrist or so on. And from what we said and what Blake said, it seems like he was depressed. So our family doctor prescribed some medication for him, but I think at 16, it was kind of hard on him to listen to a family doctor and say, we're going to give you these medication for depression, but it might take 2 weeks. And in 2 weeks, we might find out it's not the right medication for you. So it's a kind of a trial and error situation. I think to ask a 16-year-old to comprehend that and to have the maturity or the patience to handle that is kind of tough. With his depression and lack of patience at that age, I think Blake figured, you know what? What I have to do is I have to get happy. So instead of having the wait out time, self-medicating could make him happy maybe within 5 minutes or so. So he started to self-medicate. And as that went on in time, it became harder and harder. And he became, you know, he started out with pot, and then he grew into cocaine and different drugs. And again, he became addicted. I don't like to use the term a drug addict. To me, it seems a little harsh. If anyone asked me what the situation was, I would say he had a drug dependency disorder. It's a little softer. It makes them sound a little more human. Blake progressed to take these drugs, and it was getting the best of him. I remember, something sad. I remember when he was involved in this, and he got his first job at a pizza place. I remember driving him there, and I said, well, Blake, maybe you're going to be in a different surrounding now. Maybe you can meet some new friends, maybe just stay away from the dangers and so on. And he looked over at me and he said, Dad, you know what? The only problem is I'm only happy when I'm high. And my heart just sank. He said, the only time I can be happy is when I'm high. And from a parent's point of view, you just feel so hopeless. What can we do? We had him in a program near us, and it was called Pinewood. And it is it's a kind of an education place for people that are going through this. And it's a kind of you go and you talk about what you're going through. And they have people there. So social workers and so on, well, they'll assist you and ask you why you're doing this. Do you think that give you ideas of maybe about getting off and that? So he did make an effort. And I remember countless times he would come to my wife and I, and he'd say, I'm not happy doing this. I'm not happy for me not to be happy, for you not to be happy, for his sister Sadie not to be happy. I'm not doing this to hurt you. I'm not doing this to hurt myself. And it really brought awareness to me, first and foremost, that it is an illness. I've, through my times talking about his death and explaining his situation, there wasn't at any point that I was embarrassed at all, because I have bought in and I know it's an illness. I mean, I've talked to people and I've said before that if someone has cancer, or someone has diabetes, or someone has muscular sclerosis, or any of those things, you wouldn't say, hey, you loser, like you maybe if someone's in drugs, you hey, drug addict, you junkie, like that. By God, it's an illness. So if you wouldn't make some fun or little of somebody who's hurting with another illness, why would you? Think for a minute, why anybody would want this illness. No one chooses it. But why would you downplay somebody who's sick and not mine? If you can't see it, that's the problem sometimes. If you can't see the illness, it's easy to judge. So we stuck behind Blake, Susanna and I, and we tried to give him the help that he had. We went to some counseling ourselves for parents that were going through the same situation. And I learned something that really helped is we're not alone. And I learned to be with people who understood that it was an illness and it's not to be frowned upon and it's not to be, looked down upon. So that helped us a lot. But we had a weekend. Blake just turned 18. In Ontario, we have what they call a family day weekend. It's a holiday. So we were going away up to the cottage for the holiday. And Blake hadn't been in for 2 days. So I was pretty upset. He hadn't touched home, hadn't touched base with us. So that weekend, I had a chat with him and I said, we were going to go to this family day weekend. We get home, you're going to be grounded. I mean, you can't, you've got to show respect for us. We're showing respect for you. That weekend, we went away, and like the typical 18-year-old, we're at the cottage, and, the parents are playing some games and having a few drinks, and Blake wanted to join in, and I said, of course, you can have a few drinks, but you're not going to sit here and go crazy. Well, one of our friends had their daughter up there, and she, I think she was 6 years old or so at the time, but Blake chose to instead of being with the adults, he went over to the end of the cottage at a coffee table, and he made balloons, balloon figures and animals and that for this little girl. And that's where he felt most at home, I think. That's where he felt his comfort zone is when he was with younger kids. Probably because from, you know, an infant up to grade 8, there wasn't a lot of stresses in life for him. And I think it's when he joined high school was where, you know, whether it's teasing, whether it's bullying, or just the stress from being in high school, that was getting the best of him. That was causing his depression. But to look at Blake and say, you know, people will sometimes, you're defined by your illness. By no means was he defined by his illness. He was the most easygoing, loved being around people, loved to share, loved to laugh. You know, something that's kind of nice to hear, but the timing was wrong when Blake did pass and we're at his funeral. All these parents coming up to me and saying what kind of teenager he was, what kind of kid he was, what kind of man he was, how responsible, how humble, how generous he was. There'd be maybe he's going to a pool party, and he would arrive at the house, you know, a half hour earlier, help them set up chairs, help them set up with everything. So it's kind of sad when we go through life with our kids, and whether it's an illness or whether it's just the teenage years, and sometimes, you know, when you're at home as a parent, you don't maybe look at your child and appreciate the other things that they are right and what they're doing. And these parents pointed out to me that, you know, I'm sitting back, my God, you know, maybe we did a pretty good job. And it's something that always sticks in my mind. And, you know, with him gone now, it really makes sense for us dads out there to let the kids know before it's too late. I mean, if it happens to me, it can happen to anyone. It's about showing the love, and there isn't a day go by that I don't miss them. There isn't a day go by that I don't wonder. Of course, I think we all do, is when our child passes, is what could I have done different? Sometimes I don't know if the pain's worse losing the child or losing the future that you may have had with them. So, when we got back from the cottage, we didn't see Blake. He came home the first night. Next night, I know he was pissed off, and we didn't see him the next night. And he didn't come home. This is 2 days now, so I was phoning the police. Earlier that morning, the day he left, my daughter was playing with one of her friends before school, and the girl had a little Walkman or so on, and Blake took that. And I knew it was missing, and I knew Blake would have taken that, because a lot of the things we go through as parents with kids involved in this, they don't think of the big picture. They think of what they need. They think of the money they need, and they think of what's going to make them happy. So my ploy was that day, which I had learned from their support group, is I was going to phone the police and squeal on him and have the police come and have the police arrest him for taking this. And the whole reason behind it is, as I had learned in my group, that another parent had had a problem with their child, and the police said to them, if you agree to go into a rehab and you stick there for the 3 months, we will get rid of the charge. So I thought this might be a way of getting Blake into something like this. So that's what I had planned. I phoned the police. They were unable to come that night. The following night, I was going out to get a lock for my daughter's door, a new doorknob and lock. And as I got to the front door, I was met by two police officers. And right away, I'm thinking, you know what? Okay, they're here to take the report from the night before. And then they said, is your wife here? Could we speak to you both? And I said, yeah. And I called my wife up from downstairs, and she came up, and we sat in the family room, and the police officer said that Blake had went into the library that day. And while in the library, he went into a washroom by himself, and it's a one-person washroom. And he proceeded to take some drugs. He's taking some morphine, I believe. He went in around noon hour, 6 hours later, they found him. Somebody was trying to get into the bathroom. which is beyond me why no one tried it beforehand. I think they did, but they did nothing about it. So he had been in there for 6 hours and he had died. And my head still wonders if the washroom situation would have been different. Would he be alive today? Would have someone knocked on the door 10 minutes afterwards and go in? He had a heart attack. He had all these things. So that's something that sits there in the back of my head. And it's painful. Like I said, I really miss the future. I miss what I don't have. I miss seeing everything that everybody saw, my son. I saw it too, but it's so nice to hear from an outside and what he would have become and the kind of man and married, maybe kids. After my process of dealing with his death, within 6 months, I joined an organization in my hometown. It's called Bereaved Families. And it's a support group for parents who have lost a child. Within a year or two, I took a facilitating course because what it was missing in that program, they had support groups for mothers. It had been 20 years since the last support group for dads. And I know that I was hurting and I know I needed help. Within those first 2 years, it did help me, the support group. So I took this facilitating course and became a facilitator, myself and another gentleman. And then for the last 6 years, we started a support group for fathers. It goes from probably 10 to 12 weeks. We have new dads in there who months apart from losing their child. We have dads come that are a year apart, 2 years that never really got help. And for me, it's been a saving grace because to help somebody else is what helps me. To know that I'm not alone is what helps me. To help other dads and know that they're not going crazy, the emotions, anger, love, fear, it's all accepted. It's all to happen. And to educate people that you will get through this. It's baby steps. Within time, we will move forward. We won't move on, but we will move forward. And I think within the last 6 years or so, I've had dads come in that couldn't barely get in the door with emotion, cried, didn't say anything the first group, which is in the first group, we usually tell our stories. But by the end of the 11th week, you see a lot of the shoulders drop. You see a lot, the breath is a little easier. I haven't met a father yet that hasn't benefited from doing this program. And, you know, today I think about without this program, where would I be? Without programs such as you guys run, the podcasts and so on, where would anyone be today? And I think it's so important to have these services to let people know that you're not alone, to let people know that it's okay, any emotion and every emotion you will have, and to know that together we can do this. And to let the groups, when I do get groups, I let people who have lost due to an addiction, to let them know that the child shouldn't be and won't be judged by their illness. Something myself and my wife have adapted for Blake. I have a tattoo of Blake with a skateboard on it. His picture with a skateboard. He was like regular kid, loved to skateboard in the summer, loved to snowboard in the winter. And on that tattoo, it says, never forgotten. No blame, no shame, just love. And that's our theory. I could never be upset with him for being sick. I'll never be ashamed of him. And I couldn't love him anymore. I feel he's with me every day. I feel he guides me. He helps me do what I do to help other people. And, you know, we all know there's triggers every day, but I guess I kind of like to think that if I was in the opposite position and I was the one who passed, and I would be looking at my son and daughter, and as much as they can, I would want them to be happy. I know, easier said than done. I try to live life the best I can. I try to help people, which helps myself. I know my son, if the roles were reversed, I would want my son and daughter to be happy when they can. I know it's a struggle. And I know he'd want the same for me. He'd say, it's okay, Dad, to be happy some days. It's okay not to cry. It's okay if you forgot I wasn't in your mind all day. That's okay. So that's the way I try to live, and I try to help other dads.
Chris, first off, thank you so much for coming on and telling us about Blake and, you know, your guys' story. As a dad who has some teenagers, it is a constant fear of mine, like you said, of them going through high school and what they might be dealing with every day now that we don't see. So one topic I think you brought up that Dan and I have never had to deal with before in the grief world is the embarrassment part that you talked about. I had never thought about that before until you said it. Could you maybe give some advice about maybe to parents that are going through the same situation and they might have that feeling of embarrassment, and maybe give them some ideas of how to get over that?
Well, I think for myself, the easiest way is I try to look at the big picture of, for any of us in the situation, if it was a drug overdose, is you look first and foremost at the person. An illness does not define the person. I mean, you have people who have, let's say, okay, for my son, he died at 18. I had 2 years of drug dependency with Blake. But I've had, 14 years of no illness to look and see the caring, loving person that he is. So I think what we have to first and foremost is look at the person, who they are. Don't look at the illness. Be mad and upset at the illness, but not the person. Everyone I talk to, a parent, when they tell me their son or daughter has passed through a drug addiction, I ask them, tell me about your son, and the joy that these people, or their daughter, and the joy that they get on their face. And I said, okay, so let's remember that child for who they are. Not because, unfortunately, they got sick. Judge them for the person that they are. And people, that's the way we have to think. No one has a right to say anything about your child because they're sick. And like I said before, we don't judge other illnesses. So why would we judge an illness of drug dependency? You know?
Yeah, that's a great point and a great way to look at it. And in today's day, I think needed more and more with kind of the situation both of our countries are going through with drugs. It's super important to kind of change the narrative and the thought mindset with that. Dan, you got a question?
Yeah, I think I appreciate, Chris, how you're focusing on Blake as a person and not, as you said, don't call him a drug addict. I've had that in some of my trainings at school this past year, and I had never thought of it. I come from, I guess, a privileged home where we've never had drugs in my home growing up. I have no experience with any of that world, and I'm guilty of using the terms drug addict because I guess that's the way I was trained through society, that's mm-hmm. how we identified. I think that's a very important distinction that you make, that yes, this is an illness, and let's focus on the person and not identify them as an addict.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious, can you elaborate a little more? You, as you're talking here, you seem to have it all together, and you just sound so smooth through the whole process of what Blake went through, what you and your wife Suzanne went through, through his passing, and then starting the dad's group. Can you elaborate a little bit more for our listeners of, did you wrestle at all with starting that dad's group? How long did it take you? What was the process of you working up the courage to share your story and Blake's story. Yeah. Was it smooth? Was it rough? Because yes, men especially have a hard time talking about their grief, opening up, and ultimately getting help.
Yeah, of course. Well, when Blake passed, I think it was almost 8 months before I went to Durham bereavement, because I wasn't ready. And something in respect to that is, when we have some dads coming and they want to come in and they want to join a men's group, what we usually do is we do a one-on-one with them. We highly recommend in that situation about 6 months or so, because you have to deal with your own pain before you want to get into a group and be blown away by everybody else around you and hearing their pain. I remember the first time I went to a drop-in, like I said, about 8 months after Blake passed. I remember walking up the steps, and there's 17 steps, and they are the longest steps to get to the top floor there. And so many times climbing those steps, I stopped and I'm thinking, I'm going to turn around. And after 8 months, I thought, well, you know what? I have to start somewhere. But I did have an attitude going into that meeting that nobody has it as rough as me. Nobody has as bad as me. Nobody loved their child as much as I did. And I'm going to go in there. I'm going to listen to you guys, but you're not going to be hurting like I am. So I went into that group and we went around. There's maybe 6 or 7 people that night there. And we told our story. And I'm still feeling like nobody's got as bad as Chris. And then when there was a couple there, husband and wife, and when it got to them, they had said that they lost their daughter. And then 6 months later, they lost their son. And I thought, you know what? There's always somebody out there. There's always somebody who might have it a little bit rougher. And in today's society, there's so much going on. Everybody's dealing with something. And it kind of brought me back to reality that I'm not alone. But in respect to when is the right time, there's no right time, but I do believe about 6 to 8 months, so you can do your own mourning, you can do your own grieving between maybe yourself, your family, and your wife before it's, you go in and it's too early to listen to someone else's story. So I do think you have to prepare yourself. Some people have joined the group, my men's group, and after a week, I can't handle this now. And and that's perfect. Just so happens, next group around, a year later, they joined and went real smooth for them. So it's an individual process for every individual when they're ready. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, I think you're highlighting a very important couple, very important steps that, yes, we've talked about it a lot, at least recently with some guests, of you've got to take care of yourself first. Yeah. And I'm actually in conversations with a couple people locally. We have Erica and I are hosting a grief support group for any type of grief, not just children. But I'm having discussions with people it's a wife who's trying to get her husband in there. He's just not ready to talk yet. And yeah. Another family that just lost their child, that they're nowhere close to being ready to go into a group yet. But I do think there is a lot to be said about after that 6 months or whatever that time period is, that you do get into a group and be prepared to just sit there and listen for a week or two or three.
Yep.
Because yep. One of the important steps of grief is to learn that I am normal, and what I'm thinking is normal, and what I'm going through is normal, and it is all different. All our stories are different, but grief in general, what you're going through is normal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, so many people have said, and just... making a point to what you said is, so many people have come into the group and say, I'm foggy. I can't remember things. One minute I'm happy, one minute I'm crying. And I think to emphasize on your point, that is normal. That's all normal. Everything, to be happy 1 minute, to be angry 1 minute. And people say, am I going crazy? And no, you're not going crazy, but you're not alone. And you see, like I said, you see people's shoulders just drop when they hear that. There's so much power in knowing that you're not alone and it is accepted and it is normal. And again, what you said too, is that we will say when people join the group, tonight you want, is this your first group? You want to just listen? There's no pressure in our group. We said there's no judgment. You come in, you can be angry, you can cry, you can. But I think people have to get through that a little bit themselves. I tell people, and again, it's just my belief and my theory that you've got to hurt before you can heal. And you've got to have that time to hurt yourself before you can come in and maybe hold your emotions a bit because you want to present yourself and say your story, but not till you're ready. Yeah.
Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
Chris. Yeah, I think the hurt before you heal. Wow, that's that kind of hit me right in my heart because that's, you know, I think about that now. I think there's times where maybe I hold it in a little bit too long, even 2 or 3 years down the road. You know, I'm coming up on my 3-year mark of losing my son. And I had a pretty good meltdown the other day when I went to see a movie. And it was really based around grief. And I had no idea that the movie was. And it hit me way harder than I thought. And I thought, wow, I didn't let myself hurt for a while. It's okay to let that happen years down the road. It's not going to be like a one and done sort of thing. I think that's 100%. Important to throw out there that that hurt before you heal, you're going to hurt for a while before you get to any of that healing. So that's a great way to say that. I appreciate you throwing that out.
You got to do that before you're, I think, able to open up and listen. One thing we do in our group sometimes when we have just a drop in, the facilitators might be somebody maybe a year or 8 months into their journey of healing, and the other facilitator might be someone who's 20 years in. And I think a good point to that is when people come in, the facilitator that's a little bit fresher, they're more down to, I've just been through that. I understand what you're going through. But the benefit of having sometimes is a facilitator 20 years is they show that I have got through this. You will get through this. And what they say too, and people will ask them, okay, what happens? What are you doing? And they'll say, okay, in my first so many years, it was all pain. There was more pain sometimes than thinking of the good points, thinking of the fond memories. But they said 20 years down the road, now when I think of my son or daughter's past, more so it's about the fond memories. So it gives a lot of people hope, you know, that cliche, oh, I'll never heal, it'll never get better. And some of these people are living proof that down the road it can get better. But like for us at Bereavement, we've formed a brotherhood. A real brotherhood. I've met some of the nicest guys, the coolest guys I've ever met that are dads. And I think some of the sharing we do, you'll see the anger, you'll see the tears, but a lot of our meetings, there's a lot of laughing too. And then people are, they're realizing it's okay. Because tomorrow you may be down and out and you may not be able to get out of bed. But if for 10 minutes today, you can have that happy moment. I know who's the happiest is your kids looking at you. They're the happiest right then saying, yeah, mom, yeah, dad. Good for you to take that 10 minutes today and not feel guilty for it. You know? Yeah.
I gotta throw this out there. I think that's the formula, to be honest, because that is exactly what I did when I lost my son, Mason. Dan was my go-to for the recency. You know, he had not too long ago lost Jameson. And then, you know, Dan and I, we met Dennis, who was, how long was Dennis? Like 20 years, 20 some years down the road of losing his son.
Yeah.
And Dan could answer the questions for me in the moment. I had no idea. Dennis gave me the hope for the future that I was going to make it. And it, you know, I'm not there yet, but I'm getting there because of that formula that you mentioned. I think, you know, so those that are listening, it might be easy, it might be difficult, you know, maybe by going to those groups, but kind of finding a mentor almost per se, like a long-term person that could really give you the advice you might need. So, Dan?
I agree with that completely. And yeah, Dennis, I think actually it's 38 years. He inspired both Chris and myself very much. Because yes, I think every grieving parent goes through that, I'm never going to get over this phase. Mm-hmm. And yes, you inspire other people when you do share your story with them that, yeah, we're going to hurt forever. We're going to remember forever, but we are going to make it through this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank goodness for a situation, for what you guys do too, because I know that there's not groups everywhere to reach out to.
Right.
But by getting on here and hearing your stories and other people's stories, maybe we can, like we said, maybe we can make people drop their shoulders a little bit and feel not alone. And I think it's amazing what you two do. I know you're helping a lot of people. So, yeah. Hats off to you.
Chris, can you just quickly share a little more about where you are? Because as we've been doing our show, we've found numerous people that are in the Western New York area. And just a few weeks ago, we talked with Roger, who is within an hour of a couple of our other guests, and Chris Lepardi is moving back there this summer. And we've talked already about having that face-to-face group because we want to make every tool available for everybody that we possibly can. Yeah. Where exactly are you being our first international guest?
Yeah.
Who knows who's listening?
I'm like an hour away from Toronto. So in Ontario. So I'm an hour away from Toronto. There's a city called Oshawa. That's the closest city. I mean, I'm in Curtis, but Oshawa is the closest city to me, and we're about an hour away from Toronto.
Okay, thank you.
And yeah.
So you said a little while ago, earlier in your story, that you miss the future, you miss what you don't have, and you miss what everyone else saw in him. Which I think we all can understand that. Can we flip back to, though, what you've mentioned a few times, though, about the memories? What is one of your best memories of Blake?
Like some of the childhood memories we have. Blake loved the cottage. He loved being outdoors. He loved the camping and that. So I know when he was 5 years old, he said, "Dad, can we camp in the backyard?" And I said, "Yeah." So we're camping in the backyard. And, you know, I got a couple of idiot neighbors who come over and they want to tease us. They want to scratch the tent and all that. But he's just trying to be so cool. And he says, "Dad, are you afraid?" I said, no, I'm not afraid." I said, "That's just guys teasing us. Don't worry about that. I'm not afraid either. But, like, if you want to go inside, we can go inside." You know, he just stuff like that. Or when he was I think he was in grade 6 or 7, and we went to a drugstore to pick up some supplies, and Blake says, "Dad," no, he's in grade 5, he says, "Dad, I have a girlfriend now." I said, "Oh yeah, you do? Yeah, and like in 2 days it's Valentine's Day. I think I should get her a card." And I said, "Okay." So we went to the card section, and he's looking at cards, $17. So I'm looking, "Well, how important is this guy? I need to see a picture of her. How important is this girl? We're not spending $17 on a card." "Okay. All right." So we got a $4 card or something like that. Then we get to the till, and he says, "You know, Dad, I really like her. I think we should get her some chocolates too." So back we go get the chocolates. Next morning, he's got his card, he's got his chocolates, and he's going to school. He comes home, he's in his room. I come home. I said, "So how did Valentine's Day go?" And he said, "Dad, she broke up with me." So, you know, I'm turning going, "Oh my God, no." So I turn, "Oh, that's too bad." And he said, "Well, if she broke up with you, you know, your dad paid for those chocolates. So technically, they're my chocolates then. Oh, no, Dad, I was really sad. And the only thing that made me happy was eating those chocolates. So I said, you little bugger, you little swine. Don't get older because you'll even get bigger ideas than this. But, yeah, he was a kid who constantly teased. He just, like, he loved him and his sister to pick on their dad and tease their dad and all that. He loved joking around, and he had just a very, very contagious smirk, contagious smile. Like I said, you know, I hear from friends and that he was the life of the party, so he had such a contagious character in him that he drew people to him. His smile drew people. There's everything about him was amazing, except the unfortunate illness. And he would have went on. He had planned just before he was registered to go to college, and his first year he was taking a general trades course to try the plumbing, the carpenter, and all this stuff. And then the following year, you pick the trade that you wanted to focus on. And he was really, really interested in doing that. He loved playing lacrosse. He loved playing all the sports. He was a typical kid. Again, snowboarding in the winter, skateboarding in the summer. But we had such a good relationship until, you know, sometimes when they're 16 and they're doing something different, like you said, I haven't done that and I don't understand it. So, you know, we'd have our run-ins, but I think, oh my God, the relationship. I can only think of the relationship. And I think it would have been a really cool, fun relationship, bugging each other and teasing each other. And yeah, it gets pretty hard some days. You see other kids growing up, you see the weddings you go to, you see the graduations, you see the job promotions from his friends, and you know, a lot of what ifs, but I have an amazing support group, so I get through it. Yeah.
You got swindled, my friend, with the chocolate.
Oh yeah, he knows. And that's when I know how sneaky he'd be, and I'm thinking, now if that was at 10 years old, what would he be doing at 21?
Yeah,
he'd be all over me, and he'd be getting, his biggest thing was to get away with stuff from me. He'd be smiling his head off. Yeah, and I miss that. Yeah.
Thanks for sharing the memories.
Yeah, for sure, guys.
Yeah, it sounds like he was an awesome young man, and we really, truly appreciate you coming on and sharing his story with us.
Oh, I appreciate what you guys do, that's for sure. Yeah.
So I gotta ask, being so close to Toronto, are you a Maple Leafs fan?
Actually, I watch the Leafs because that's the station we get. But no, I am a diehard, since grade 9, I'm a diehard Red Wings fan. In our community.
Wow. I did not see that coming.
I know.
Yeah, I grew up in Peterborough, Ontario, and it's an hour and a half from Toronto. And there they have a junior A hockey team. So when I was growing up, some of the guys I knew from high schools played for the Peterborough Petes. Steve Eiserman played for the Petes, and Bob Airey played for the Petes. And that's how I started focusing more on them. But I've been a Wings fan for a long time, but it's a little tough right now, that's for sure.
Well, but they're rebuilding. We won't hold that against you too much.
No. Oh, my faith in Stevie Y. Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, I'm just glad my Sabres are finally starting to look like maybe we'll make the playoffs and the first time in however many years. So
it's going to be
interesting. We're having a good season. I'm rolling with it.
It's going to be interesting come trade deadline. What I think Buffalo's going to pick up some players. Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. Yeah, for sure. Cool. Yeah.
Well, Dan, anything else you could think of?
I've got everything that I've thought of.
Okay.
So,
well, Chris, again, we really truly appreciate you coming on, spending time with us, telling us about Blake, and I think you're going to give a lot of parents some hope for the future when they listen to the episode, and give them somebody what they can do to help themselves out during this, these difficult times if they're dealing with grief. And you're always welcome back anytime.
Yeah, Pleasure, guys.
I think I'm actually going to be contacting you for some info. I think you have some good details that I want to get from you, if you're okay with that.
Well, by all means, definitely. We're in this together, guys. Absolutely. We're in this together. Yeah.
Good.
Yep.
Yeah, Chris, thanks so much for joining us and sharing your story. To everybody listening, if Chris Garvey's story resonated with you, as always, please reach out to Chris Lopardi or myself. We will gladly get you connected because we're in this together. You can reach out at info@jamesonsjoy.org or through Jameson's Joy on Facebook. Chris, you can be reached at?
Chris@milesformasonmemorial.com.
And we'll get if you want to reach out to Chris Garvey, we'll gladly get you his email we'll confirm everything and get your permission and all that. But yeah, we're in this together. So thank you all for listening as always. And if you've been inspired by the last few guests we've had and you're feeling not comfortable, but willing to come on and share your story, please do, because it is hard, but it does help just to share. And reach out to us, and we'd love to have you on and give you the floor to talk about your loved ones that are gone too soon. So with that, we will wrap up another episode of A Father's Love, Healing Through Heartache.